the more threatening the situation. In the past, the U.S. has been more prepared to make a deal and compromise.
North Korea may be building new missiles. It's Wednesday, August 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. You're also welcome to join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, Cambodia's ruling party in full control, new U.S. investment in Asia, lobsters caught in tariffs, clean breathing in Hanoi. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Military officials from North and South Korea met Tuesday at the border village of Panmunjom in a renewed effort to build trust amid a thaw in cross-border relations. The two Koreas have agreed to discuss reductions in weapons and military personnel along their demilitarized zone, or DMZ. The talks took place as a senior U.S. official said satellites have detected renewed activity at the Samundong facility that produced the country's first intercontinental ballistic missiles, even as the U.S. pursues denuclearization talks with Pyongyang. The Washington Post, citing unidentified reports and officials, reported Monday the North appeared to be building one or two new liquid-fueled missiles. Bruce Bennett is a senior defense analyst at the RAND Corporation. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty the North's motivation is unclear. Either it is simply pursuing activities it has engaged in the past, or is deliberately pursuing activities it knows the United States will see as a way to extract further concessions.
The North wants an end to the economic sanctions against the North, and so they may be sending out images in a way that they're hoping will push the U.S. to make more compromise.
In June, U.S. officials told U.S. media outlets intelligence agencies believe the North has increased production of fuel for nuclear weapons, and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said as much before the U.S. Senate just last week.
Yeah, the North has learned over the years that the more threatening the situation. In the past, the U.S. has been more prepared to make a deal and compromise. The problem, of course, is that President Trump isn't necessarily the past president. If he gets pushed too hard, that could turn out bad for North Korea, and they may not be adequately recognizing that.
Generals from the two Koreas met Tuesday at their shared border for talks meant to ease tensions and the military standoff. This comes as the North repatriated, we're told, a number of American remains from the Korean conflict. How is the denuclearization process going, in your view?
I think we haven't seen much in the way of denuclearization. I mean, if you were to rank the facilities that we would be concerned about, the ones that North Korea has talked about and done something about, the nuclear testing facility, a launch stand for a missile, those would be at the bottom of the list. They would not be of significant interest because here's North Korea producing more fissile material and producing potentially more missiles. It's the production facilities that we want to get under control, and there's no movement on getting those under control.
Bruce Bennett said the latest development should cause some concern within the Trump administration. He said since North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's charm offensive began in January, the North has not denuclearized but continues to nuclearize, adding to its growing arsenal of weapons. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find currently trending on VOAnews.com. North Korea tops Pompeo agenda at Asia's security meeting. Vietnam floods kill three, threaten to submerge parts of Hanoi. Japan asks Russia to reduce military activity on disputed islands. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. You'll also find them and a whole lot more on VOAnews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. In Cambodia, the ruling party says it has won every seat in parliament. Sunday's election was slammed by rights groups as a sham because the main opposition party was banned. The Cambodian People's Party said it now controls all 125 seats in the National Assembly. CPP figures show voters' second most popular choice was to spoil their ballots, despite the government's threats against those considering using their constitutional right to boycott the election. Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen is now set to extend his already 33-year reign by another five, free of any real opposition party. Late last year, the CPP's only real opponent in the election, the Cambodia National Rescue Party, was dissolved, and its leader, Kem Sokha, jailed on widely derided allegations it was fomenting an internationally backed plot to overthrow the government. Joshua Kurlansich is a senior fellow for Southeast Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations, and he shares his reaction with VOA's Sarah Williams.
Cambodia wasn't a democracy before. It was sort of a something of a flawed hybrid regime, but now it's become a full-on autocracy run by Hun Sen, the prime minister. I mean, I think it means there's probably going to be some degree more repression, and there's no real blocks against Hun Sen. I'm not sure in practicality it changes that much, since Hun Sen was in a fair degree of control before, but it definitely further limits the scope for any sort of limitations on Hun Sen's power.
And what about the state of the opposition? So many opposition leaders are now in exile, if not in prison.
Yeah, many are in exile in prison, or some, there are some still in Cambodia, but they're especially if it turns out in terms of civil society opposition leaders, but they're scared. I don't have one good answer. It's possible Hun Sen will try to co-opt some of them, which is something he's done in the past, and sort of restore some degree of normalcy and slightly more open environment. It's also possible that he sees this as like the determining year, the determining time, and this is just going to become an all-out autocracy, and that their options would be to try to rally street protests or some sort of aggressive sort of, I don't want to say violent, but some sort of aggressive non-street or non-ballot box type repercussion in response. But right now, the opposition is pretty much shattered.
Kem Lay, who was an activist 2 years ago, was assassinated. Before his assassination, he had been very critical of Hun Sen, particularly because the organization Global Witness had put out a report saying Hun Sen's family was worth a minimum of $200 million. Considering what has happened since, and I believe an investigation was supposed to take place regarding that killing, but nevertheless, when you think about what has happened, I mean, does this mean that Hun Sen could, he and particularly his family moving forward, try to accumulate, extend power, say, into the next generation and continue to accumulate more wealth?
Well, I think that there was an investigation into the killing, although the question is that they placed the blame on a man who seems unlikely that he was behind the killing, and there are some even questions about his mental capabilities. Yeah, I mean, I think Hun Sen is probably potentially preparing to try to hand power over time to one of his sons and or others in his family, yes.
Joshua Kurlansik is a senior fellow for Southeast Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations. We're glad, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. The Trump administration has offered what it calls its vision for a free and open Indo-Pacific region, with American business investment at the center of it and aimed at peace, stability, and prosperity. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo addressed the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Monday as he prepared to leave for a trip to Malaysia, Singapore, and Indonesia. The initial outlay of $113 million is being billed as a down payment on what Pompeo described as a new era of U.S. economic commitment. The three-part plan includes funds for technology, energy, and infrastructure among ASEAN nations of Southeast Asia. Ankit Panda is associate director of the Asia Current Events publication, The Diplomat. He tells VOA the Trump administration is downplaying any idea. This is direct competition with China's massive Belt and Road development initiative.
The United States, along with Japan and Australia and even India, has been publicly quite supportive of the idea of supporting a high standards-based infrastructure regime in Asia. So even though the numbers aren't quite there, I think the administration thinks that, you know, U.S. partners, allies, and other states in the region will see this as the start of a growing U.S. interest. And also, I think a lot of regional partners are aware of the different economic natures of the Chinese and U.S. governments, in the sense that the U.S. does not have the ability for the government itself to leverage large amounts of capital because U.S. private industry plays a much bigger role than FDI, whereas in China, you have the massive state-owned enterprise sector that the Communist Party can effectively leverage as it sees fit for geopolitical ends.
Bonnie Glaser, director of the China Power Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said the United States initiative could help reassert America's influence in the region and ease growing concerns about its ability to sustain its commitments beyond defense. Coming up, lobster harvesters are feeling the pinch of trade tariffs. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Malaysia's civil aviation chief says he has resigned to take responsibility after an independent investigative report highlighted shortcomings in the air traffic control center during Malaysia Airlines Flight 370's disappearance 4 years ago. You'll always find VOA Asia Facebook online. Visit today. This is VOA Asia. Now, as VOA Asia continues, trade tariffs, claw at lobsters, and the business of cleaning the air in Hanoi are the topics on this week's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Lobstermen in Maine are worried about the future of the industry as the tariff war between China and the U.S. continues. Last week, China imposed a 25% tariff on U.S. lobster exports, forcing Chinese importers to look for other markets. The duties came in response to tariffs posed by U.S. President Donald Trump on Chinese goods. Michael Marceau, who owns the lobster company in Arundel, Maine, is worried about what's to come.
That's a hand grenade in business. When something happens that quickly, that devastating.
China is the biggest overseas market for U.S. lobster sales. The industry was on track to more than double sales this year, with export data showing sales of $75.3 million through June, compared with $34.2 million over that same period in 2017. Now, business owners like Marceau are worried they might have to downsize.
Most of our employees have been with us a long time. We do Shanghai, Shenzhen, Beijing. Hong Kong, 12 years ago, imported maybe 300,000 or 400,000 pounds a year. Now they take 6-7 million.
A group of Democrats is pushing for disaster aid for seafood harvesters affected by the tariffs, but nothing has passed the U.S. Congress yet. Hanoi is making a big investment in cleaning up its air pollution. In its fight, the Hanoi City Council this month approved a ban on motorcycles by 2030, hoping to boost public transport. Jason McInerney is a U.S. environmental and health officer.
In any capital city in the world, the four most common contributors will be vehicle emissions, power plants, in particular coal power plants, agricultural burning in season, when that burning season is, and if it is present, industrial emissions. And from what I've seen in Hanoi, I suspect that would be that general pattern that's true worldwide would, I believe, also apply here in Hanoi.
Home to 7.7 million people, Hanoi's pollution levels last year were four times higher than what the World Health Organization considers acceptable. This year, Hanoi recorded 10 clean air days in the second quarter, higher than the corresponding period in 2016 and 2017. In an effort to keep that trend going, the city council also planted 80% of a target of 1 million trees and is encouraging people to replace petrol with cleaner biofuels and use cleaner burning heaters. But challenges remain. Coal still provides the bulk of electricity for Vietnam's fast-growing economy, which is expected to grow more than 6% this year for the fourth time. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook and, of course, our website, voanews.com. You'll also find us on the radio around Asia, great radio stations like Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore. Thanks to everyone there who's tuned in today to our program. And our program is made possible by some great people. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Thomas Blondet, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.